Welcome to the audio podcast of The Table at Central United Methodist Church. The podcast currently features the messages of Matt Smith and Linda Du Hirsu,
with a musical introduction by Brendan Lowe, our director of music. Thanks for listening. Our reading this morning comes from Matthew chapter 2, verses 1 through 12. In the time of King Herod, after Jesus was born in Bethlehem of Judea, wise men from the east came to Jerusalem asking, "Where is the child who has been born king of the Jews? For we observed his star at its rising and have come to pay him homage." When King Herod heard this, he was frightened and all Jerusalem with him. And calling together all the chief priests and scribes of the people, he inquired of them where the Messiah was to be born. And they told him, "In Bethlehem of Judea. For so it has been written by the prophet, 'And you, Bethlehem, in the land of Judea, are by no means least among the rulers of Judah. For from you shall come a ruler who is to shepherd my people Israel.' Then Herod secretly called for the wise men and learned from them the exact time when the star had appeared. Then he sent them to Bethlehem, saying, 'Go and search diligently for the child, and when you have found him, bring me word so that I may also go and pay him homage.' When they had heard the king, they set out, and there ahead of them went the star that they had seen at its rising until it stopped over the place where the child was. When they saw that the star had stopped, they were overwhelmed with joy. On entering the house, they saw the child of Mary, his mother, and they knelt down and paid him homage. Then, opening their treasure chests, they offered him gifts of gold, frankincense, and myrrh. And having been warned in a dream not to return to Herod, they left for their own country by another road."
If I should fly beyond the dawn, the darkness will not overcome. If I lie down in deepest night, still you are there, my Lord, my life. Still you are there, my Lord, my life.
I'm wearing jeans in church. I warned my mother ahead of time. It's only happened 4 times in like 25 years of ministry, mostly after serving homeless people, and I'm really tired. And so I'm wearing jeans and my boots. So it makes me looser. I'm just warning you. that's it. And I'm excited to tell you that last week, I can't remember what day it really is. I do know this is Sunday, but someday after Christmas, I saw a movie in a theater. That's rare for me. Our whole family, all 5 of us, went to see a movie in a theater. And it was called The Imitation Game. And this film, I went to it on the recommendation of someone I really respect. And this film puts on screen for me one of the main things that keeps me awake at night, which is worrying about my children. It's the number one thing that keeps me awake. What will they become? How will my children be received by a hostile world that doesn't understand them and doesn't care about their very special needs? I can actually trace the night in which I could no longer just, like, go to bed and my head would hit the pillow and out I would go. I had that life. There was that life at one time. But that all ended for me on January 20th, 1994. My first child was born 6 weeks early by C-section. He didn't cry, and they took him away really fast. to the NICU, and I'm yelling at my husband, "Don't let him out of your sight!" My sister stayed with me. And probably since that time, I don't think really there's been the kind of sleep that I used to have ever again. Maybe you're like me, or maybe you're not, or maybe that's in your future. What I can say is we hope to tread gingerly, because I don't mean to make light of it, and go with care and love into the fears and the anxieties that keep a lot of us awake at night. We know that at the end of the day, when we've finished our work and we're ready for rest, that often that's exactly when our fear and anxiety can get the best of us, you know. Despite any of our best efforts, it happens. Rather than finding rest, we start worrying. The machine starts turning. Instead of being able to fall asleep, our minds go over and over in endless what ifs. What if this? What if that? What if this? Or sometimes we actually are able to fall asleep, only to be awoken sometime in the middle of the night with a fear-filled dream. That happens too. So what we're going to try and do is explore passages from the Gospel of Matthew and one from Mark as we wonder together about how we might somehow find a way to get comfort and security with God. How can we access that? And today our focus is on Matthew and the story of the Magi arriving at the manger where Jesus was born. And this is a passage which also happens to undergird a season or a celebration, a festival in the church called Epiphany. And sometimes we celebrate Epiphany as a day in which the Magi arrived at the manger, and sometimes preachers use it as a whole season to illuminate the presence. That's what we try to do, illuminate the presence and actions of Jesus in God's world during this time of preaching. And to kind of think of Jesus like that star that they followed, the Magi, as a guide for us. And as the star guided the Magi to their destination, so too maybe can Jesus be a guide to our travels in our lives. If you look up Epiphany in the dictionary, you find out it means a manifestation of God's presence in the world. We also refer to Epiphany as like in just our regular lives. Sometimes you just have this sudden intuitive perception of meaning. That actually traces back to an author, a novelist in Ireland named James Joyce. Maybe you've heard of him. And he wrote Stephen Hero, which is a real classic work. And in that work, he lifted up things he called epiphanies. And that we really trace in literature back to our use in the English language, the way he wrote about epiphanies. And the way he described them, I love, which I want to share with you, is the whatness. An epiphany is the whatness of a common object or a gesture. And suddenly just something plain appears radiant. It happened this morning with, where's Carrie? Where are you? The sunrise. The sunrise this morning, the whatness. I mean, it's just a sunrise, but we just stood. It was an epiphany of beauty in the morning sun. So maybe that whatness happens to you in your life, or the what is it happens to you in your life. Has this ever happened? Maybe you're with someone who's sleeping, and you notice they're tossing and turning. They've woken you up too. And or it's a child in the room and you hear them tossing and turning or yelling, or they sit up in bed suddenly, and what's the first thing often we say, which is, what is it? Right? What? What? That's our question. The whatness of something. So what happens if that whatness scares us? The story that you heard Matt read has invited so much embellishment over time that you really have to kind of listen to it carefully. It's got whatness in it. But over the centuries, we have turned these characters into kings, three kings to be exact, but you heard it for yourself. It doesn't say that in the Bible. None of that is from the text. It's our dreamy state, adding color and image and detail, which I love to do too, but it's not in there. This is the only place where it occurs in Scripture. It's not in Mark or Luke or John. It's just here. If you've ever been to a Christmas pageant, you usually see those three kings, right? And they have crowns on. Usually there's camels around somewhere. I found out they're even named. I did not even know they had names. I don't know who named them. They're named Gaspar, Melchior, and Balthazar. Oh, you did that. Oh, that's good. You're so creative. It's not in the text. They're just wise ones. Wise ones coming. So what is going on in there? What is it with things? The whatness. We drive on the freeway, we see a news van. What do we say? What's over there? Right? The whatness of something. We walk down the street and see a crowd gathering. That happens. It happened here in Winter Sanctuary. People over a corner suddenly gathering around. Usually it was a coffee spill. What is it? We have to attend to this. But sometimes it's not good. Sometimes it's an accident or violence or tragedy that's about to be discovered. And that's what was going on in this passage too, in the ancient world. What undergirds this story that we've embellished so much are the bad dreams of a ruler named Herod, who could feel the icy hand of another who was coming, who was going to be more powerful than he was. And this other person was going to come to power. And so Herod was sending a reconnaissance team to see this newborn baby being hailed as king of the Jews. Herod used deception. And he told the team that he just wanted them to go find out. Go see what's happening over there. So he could go and be respectful and pay homage too. So I think, with the best of intentions, the wise ones set out to follow the directions of the ruler. And who knows how it actually happened? We don't know, but maybe they get there, and having completed their task and viewed the baby, they left and settled in for a night somewhere. They got out their bedrolls and they laid down, and knowing they had to make the arduous journey all the way back home to Palestine, they decided to try and get a good night's sleep. And somewhere, maybe around 2 a.m., one of them sits bolt upright on his bedroll, and the one next to him says, "What? What is it?" And he says, "Well, we can't go back. Well, we can't go back there. Not that way. There's danger." He goes, "Oh, it's just a dream. Don't worry about it. It's just a dream." He says, "No, it's real. Look at me. I'm shaking. We can't go back there. We have to go home by another road." See, even in the very first days when Jesus was alive, the world was living amidst fear and anxiety. And Matt's going to say a lot more about that next week with the next passage. But one way to read this passage this week in the Epiphany is it's a story about people trying to face down their fear. There is nothing sentimental, really, about this scene, even though we've tried to make it into that. It's just really not there. There's a guiding star, a warning dream, an intricate itinerary, all moving us toward manifestation of God's hopeful reign that's coming and being born, but it's only being born to a partly receptive world. Most of the world, like it is often today, was hostile. There's an author, poet, William H. Auden, W.H. Auden, and he wrote a classic called on the Christmas story. It's called For the Time Being. Maybe you've heard of that. And I'm not going to go into it. It's a massive work, but it captures perfectly the unease and the restlessness and the nameless dread of a people that are crying out for salvation. And maybe that was happening back then too. But they are also terrified of what it might mean to find salvation. And Herod's murderous plot against Jesus is a symptom of how the world is. It's a symptom of a civilization that gets threatened by the breaking in when things are going to change. Because we don't want change. And we want people in power want to stay in power. So the powerful shore up their defenses by whatever blind and furious means they can hold on to. And the Magi are those who follow the light that is trying to shine into a healthier place. And Auden is sharing this kind of picture in For the Time Being. And he says that the Magi are following it because their hearts are open and they can do no other. And somehow the place where the star leads, they think is going to hold a secret for them to live more truthfully and more lovingly and more humanly. So what do? They take the cold hand of terror for a guide. Maybe they take a deep breath too, and they follow the star. And what do they find? Auden says, someone, a baby, whose life is already endangered, already a portent of what is yet to come in life. Jesus has been born into this world, our world that's going to misunderstand him and use him, unfortunately, and betray him, sadly, and eventually it's going to kill him. Because the world of Herod, who sent the wise people, is going to have its triumph. But just for a time. Just for a time. And that's how it's continued to be, back and forth throughout the ages. And holding this truth, as Auden so poetically puts out there, can make everyone fearful and anxious. And so fearful and anxious, this truth that has been beyond time all the way to today, that it disrupts our very ability to rest, our ability to sleep. Well, I've learned that this isn't unusual, at least for American people. And I've learned that it's kind of our issue. Back in March last year, Eve Fairbanks wrote this piece in New York Times Magazine called When Did Sleep Become So Nightmarish? Isn't that a great title? Oh, my mic. And she takes her own struggle with insomnia. She can't sleep. She goes days and days and nights without sleeping. And so she starts to examine it. And she finds out that the Center for Disease Control and Prevention has declared in our country an epidemic, a public health epidemic. You can Google it. There's a whole paper written on it. That we have sleep anxiety in our country. Did you know there's an industry called sleep industry? It's worth billion dollars in America. A $32 billion industry to try and help people sleep. I found a mattress that cost $30,000. A mattress, there's no metal allowed, and it has seaweed and coconut husks. It's in Soho in New York. I know. $30,000 for a mattress. In our ever-expanding quest to squeeze productivity out of every minute of the day, what I learned is we're moving into our nights. We Americans. There's unaccounted amounts of hours at night. We must use them. And we must be productive. And by all reports, we now value sleep more on its own terms because we are so fixated on being productive American people. The blame is placed on our work ethic, which drives us relentlessly to produce and judges us as, I'm just laughing, and judges us as lazy if we're not producing all the time. Boy. So there's this book. It's called Relax. You'll be more productive. I know. And here, are you ready? Get this. You're ready. Sarah. Okay. 10 hours more of vacation a year increases employee productivity by 8%. I think that's good news, right? And there's numbers involved, 8%. I don't know. I don't have one scheduled. It's a problem for me, too. It's a problem. So Fairbanks, who suffered, I told you, from insomnia, did this study and went to her boyfriend, who's from South Africa, and she was so excited. And she said, check this out. If I have 10 hours more of vacation, I'll be 8% more productive, and like I could sleep more for those hours. And he said, you Americans are pathetic. You don't know how to rest unless you are resting to work better. That's our situation, our human condition, I guess. Is that true for you? Is that part of the reason that any number of things keep us awake at night? Because we have this underlying urge to make even our sleep a zone of potential productivity. It's sad to think that maybe we've evolved to this point. And that writer says it like this: there's another side of life, a side in which we don't do, but we just try to be. And sleep best represents that side of life. We cannot control our dreams, so often we appear in them other than we wish to be or fear that we actually are. So we don't want to see that either. And we forget that we are human beings. We are not human doings. Okay? One way to refocus and relax, I'm going to give you a skill, is through something we call in the church prayer. And that's one way to start trying to keep at bay this critical part of ourselves that threatens to overtake our sleep. We spend a lot of time in the fall receiving our deep commitment cards. And part of that is our financial commitments. But a lot of it is how we want to root our lives in grace and grow in faith and reach in love. And you all have a theme, an absolute clear theme this year that we are going to be working on, which is prayer. People want to know, how do I pray? How do I rediscover prayer? I used to do it, I don't do it. How do I schedule prayer on a regular basis? How is prayer useful for me? How can I pray for others? So we are going to, over the coming year, find some ways to do that. But as a simple beginning to that, we just want to remind or share for the first time for some of us that we pray in a lot of different ways here at the table. So there's not one way to pray, and Matt's going to say more about that as he invites us into prayer today. But another word for praying that can help us is the word contemplation. It's a practice. And it just means an intentional and concentrated time of holding and looking and waiting and being receptive for God. It's a way to pray. So what's that got to do with Epiphany and the Magi and all of that I've just been saying? Well, I think that the Epiphany account in Matthew tells us how the wise ones were willing to contemplate, to anchor their gaze on this star that was up in the sky and trust that if they anchored themselves there, that they would receive guidance, they would receive meaning, and they would, on this journey, find out something, which they did. They also did a very important thing, which was when they got there, they asked for help from those that were around them in the Jewish tradition. So, do you think it might be possible that as we live our lives and anchor our lives, and that as we try to approach sleep, that something like a star or the Holy Spirit or God might help us too to move forward into that space. And that some things that might on the surface appear scary and frightful might actually guide us deeper and closer to God. Because look, Herod, the evil ruler, in contrast to these Magi, only allowed himself to be guided by fear. He finally manipulates the information that he receives back to his own dark ends. And you might say that Herod's life becomes a living nightmare for himself. And he wounds everyone around him. That's all he does throughout his life. And to be clear, when God shows up, when those epiphanies happen, sometimes there is a threat. Mostly the threat is to the human balance of power, often, and our need to control things. And that's scary for us. So we put it at bay. But I think that's a lot of why we can't sleep at night, or we're kept awake, or why we get disrupted. But if we become aware of the way in which God's presence brings hope into our fear, then maybe we can start to either fall back asleep with a little less anxiety or just sleep through the night. I don't know. Because when we are unaware of how God's presence comes with hope into hard spaces, hard times, that stirs us up. And what we end up doing is destroying the beauty and the mystery of God. And we just close it out, and we're sure that we can control it. I'm going to make a list right now. I'm going to wake up at night, make this list that's next to my bed, so I won't forget this. Talking to myself. See, maybe gradually we can all learn what it means through this series for God to be our center place, the foundation of our hope. In our sleep and in our waking. I want to be really clear about something, though. I'm not trying to say, pray away your fear. Okay? I don't want to insult anyone or minimize the fears that we hold, because they're real and they're there for a reason. What I am saying is, maybe we can remember that we are all in this together. And that it is possible that some of us, many of us, get lost on our way towards living the life we long to live, which includes rest and renewal at night. And maybe the practice of prayer might help us to restore some of the balance. So we asked our kitchen tables this week, those that met, if any of them are kept up at night, just so we would know we're in this together. Because sometimes people are like, yeah, she says that, but it's not true. So here, maybe a few of these fears, which are mentioned by some of our folks, might resonate with you. Someone's at the end of their life plan, and they've launched their career. Now what? So they've done with their education, they're in their career, now what? And when they look around, it seems like everyone else has everything figured out except for them. And they can't sleep at night for worrying. Some of us have job stress, and they're afraid that they're not good enough to make it in the job that they're in, and they're waiting to get fired. They're just waiting for this to happen. Some of us have fear about their family and whether or not they're on a good path with their family. Some of them want to know, how am I going to shape and construct a family? How am I even going to begin to do that? I want to have kids. How do I do that? How much money do I have to make before I can do that? What has to happen? Am I going to be good enough? Am I going to be patient enough? Am I going to have enough time to actually spend with children that I say that I want to have? Money, finances, emergencies that I haven't planned for, savings to pay for them. I feel it in the room. I feel it. It's all of us. Loans, credit cards. I can't get ahead. I'm falling further behind. I wake up and I keep trying to figure out, how did I get to this point anyway? And how am I going to get out of it before I wake up? These fears and anxieties just churn and resurface, preventing us from rest. And we wake up at night wondering, what is it? Why am I awake? And on the surface, it's money, job, family, children, all those things I named. But maybe what it really is that we feel unmoored and we need to have a path to follow. And we need to know that at least we can put one foot in front of the other in a certain direction. So when the wise ones were visiting and finished and had their dreams, They could have named what scared them and scared all of us. I just did it. They could have said that out loud. And that might have been their epiphany. But what they chose to do was take another path home, to listen to themselves and to stay hard and fast, committed to each other and their team, and to get home by another way. So when we become jarred awake by our fears, what if we do the same? What if we look at that jarring awake when it happens this week, over these next few weeks, as an opportunity to invite God into this whatness, even if we can't name it, this whatness of our lives? What if we start being intentional about inviting God into our choices of career and family? What if we start inviting God into the way we choose to spend and save our money? What would that look like? What about if we invite God into the way we prioritize our time with friends and family? How would we do that? Would a prayer of invitation, just that, to God to be with us and guide us through our days and nights, just be a simple way to begin that practice as we move into these coming weeks? We heard Melissa sing for us that song by Carrie Newcomer, Dreaming. The lyrics went like this: out of eternal night where no dawn broke came a pale new light, and the dreamer woke. And the world is wrapped in wind, and the fields are filled with dust, and that collects in rising rings of perfect loneliness. Because we get to that place, perfect loneliness, and we're afraid we're all by ourselves in that fear. It's scary to feel that rising. But then the next part she writes is the same but different. The world is wrapped in wind and the fields are filled with mist. Could there be a waking wonder more beautiful than this? Because we're not really alone if we allow others to be in it with us. I just want to close with this poem, last poem by Denise Levertov, which takes Carrie's words the next step. When we wake up, it's like when we face for a moment the worst our kind, our human people, can do. And we shudder. That's Herod. We shudder to know the taint in our own lives, in our own selves, that awe comes into us. And it cracks the mind's shell and it enters the heart. And that can go either way, frankly. It can always go either way. But people who long to follow Jesus are saved by grace through our hope that we are not alone, that we are in this together, and that by sharing our fears and our bad dreams and our nightmares with God and each other, we will take a next step towards maybe our first restful night. Just try.
And the world is wrapped in wind, and the fields are filled with stone. And it's only because we leave that we can come home. We can come on home. So for now, let the dream and the world entwine, gather in while we can, for a given time. All that is fragile, fleeting, or that shines, fleeting, or that shines.